can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Well, how opportune is this, Don and Ivan? We call him Ivan. I won't tell you why we call him Ivan. This is our guest. How opportune is this, Don? I don't know if you're a racing aficionado.
I'm not.
Motorsport aficionado.
It's like watching paint dry.
Yeah, well, how ignorant to say that.
No, it's not a case of ignorant. I do watch it, but I think it's boring.
Well, it's a MotoGP?
Yeah, boring.
You find that boring, do
yes.
you?
Yes.
People going around on motorcycles at 340k.
No, no, hang on. That's motorcycles. You're talking about cars.
I was talking about motorsport.
Oh, boring.
Things that have got wheels and engines on them.
Yep.
Anyhow, how opportune that we have the man who runs the Australian Grand Prix in after the final race of the 2021 GP Grand Prix season. Formula One has just finished last, well, our time Sunday, but I think, oh, our time Monday, their time Sunday, or something like that. Anyhow, this man...
Yeah, why is it opportune?
Because he can speak about the last, past season, which has just ended on the weekend.
Okay.
And you might remember that Melbourne lost its Formula One Grand Prix last year or the start of this year, whenever it was, because of the COVID. And we didn't have one.
And 2020, remember we lost it 2 years in a row now.
Did we?
Yes, we did, because I was meant to be there at 2020.
Well, why don't we introduce who we're speaking to for a start? This is the Chief Executive Officer of the Australian Grand Prix Corporation, Andrew Westacott. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you, Jeff. And he should come along.
Listen, Andrew.
You should come along, Scotty, on the 10th of April, because that's when you'll see that you've missed out on a lot
of
your
I went
career.
To Sandown one day to watch, what was that one that used to be after the grand final, the cars?
The Sandown 500, the 500. Precursor to the Bathurst 1000.
Okay.
Yep, you're spot on.
The best part was the start. And the finish, the reason, and I'm not saying, but in between, I could not work it out. I thought the start was fantastic, the jockeying for position and all the rest of it, but you're so far away. It doesn't grab me.
Don, I'm going to agree with you, Don, because I am a great devotee of Formula One, and so is Ivan here. Ivan, we call him. but, mate, Don is exactly right. The lead up to it is fantastic. The start, the first three laps is fantastic, and the final four laps is the rest of it. You may as well just raffle. So Andrew, before we start, just give us your credentials. I understand that you took over from Ron.
Ron was the chairman, and John Hardman's the chairman, and now we've got Paul Little. No, I'm the chief executive officer, been the cancellation officer for the last two and a bit years.
Yes.
So I'm very pleased to be delivering next year's event with the team.
So Ron Walker was the chairman, was he?
Yeah,
the
he
late
was the
Ron
chairman.
Walker.
So you always used to ring up Ron for the tickets. I just had to make these things happen.
I never rang Ron for the tickets. He offered them to me. I would never ring up and bot tickets from. I wouldn't.
No, he wouldn't.
I would never ring up people.
He would.
I would not bought tickets from anyone. I was
but
rang
you,
up.
You were a racer at Albert Park.
I was. So Andrew, your background is you were did you own or run Uncle Ben's pet food?
I wish I owned it by the Mars Corporation.
Yes.
I think they're sort of one of the richest private families going back in the era. But no, I studied chemical engineering. I worked at the Commonwealth Games. I lived the dream making pet food. And
why is it a dream making pet food?
Oh, because it puts smiles on people's faces. And you know, and now I ended up running MotoGP and Formula One here in Victoria, Scotty. So
making smiles, that's a good
now,
line.
Anyhow, Andrew, have you driven a race car before? Are you a racer or not?
I'm not a racer, but
you love it.
I love it. I love all sport. Growing up in Melbourne, would go to anything. Back in the era, you'd go to Kooyong and watch the grass. You go and watch the Sheffield Shield. You go and watch the footy. And I just loved it all. And so grew up in that era of Darryl Eastlake, you know, Alan Jones winning in 1980, Wayne Gardner, and great to see his son winning Moto2. Interesting thing, we've got the Moto2 world champion in Remy Gardner, and we've got the Formula 2 world champion in Oscar Piastri. Yes. So essentially we've got the understudies to the big guys here in town.
Now, please don't...
Can I ask you a question?
You can, Don, but
because
just
please... I'm ignorant.
Yeah, well, I'm going to help just before you ask a question. Please don't think you've come in here to get a belting because we are on your side, but the Formula One Grand Prix has got to do something. It has become a disgracefully boring event. And this has nothing to do with you, and we love it, and I love it, and so does... But we don't think you've come in here to get a belting and we're going to rip you apart. Not at all. We're on the same side as you, but we want to be the devil's advocate with some of the things we want to ask you, which you'll have nothing to do with because it's not your wheelhouse, but you can answer on behalf of the people who run the whole thing because it's turned into a farce. Now, Don, go ahead.
You just mentioned Formula 2. Now, I'm ignorant to this. Really, I'm ignorant. Are these, what, the seconds or the precursor to number one? And they're racing on what, the undercard?
Yeah, so if you look at MotoGP, which is back in the era, you had Mick Doohan 500cc bikes, and before that, Wayne Gardner. So, you know, very fast motorbikes. And then
Casey Stoner.
The next one down was Casey Stoner. He was in MotoGP. So, to avoid confusion, 500cc, and then the undercard was the 250cc, and then the 125cc. So smaller bikes, slower bikes, lighter bikes. So you essentially went from the under-19s to the resis to the seniors. The same structure now exists in the world of F1, and they have Formula 3, which are smaller cars, Formula 2, which are faster cars, and Formula 1. Now, you go up, and if you're in the rankings and you might be a 16 or 17-year-old in the first category and you might be a 17 or 18 or 19-year-old in the second category, and when you're faster and the cream's rising to the top, or you've got a lot of loot because you're bringing sponsors to the teams,
yep,
then you'll get a gig in Formula 1. And some of the drivers in Formula 1, as Sam knows, are in there because they'll bring $30 million to the team.
Yeah, they're backing their parents. Their relations.
We'll
pay for the drive.
Hang on. So it's a money. They need the. No, I don't.
It is. Yeah, Formula One is sponsorship, money, the fastest drivers in the world. But it's show business. It's film. It's entertainment, but it is motor racing, and it's been around for 70 years.
Yeah. And you didn't forget, but of course there's a new category called e-racing now, this electric
racing. There's Formula E, which is a different category, which is electric cars, and there's W Series, which is just for women.
Oh, I didn't know
so
that.
So do you have all those on the race program for the Grand Prix?
No, we have in Australia. So generally what happens at Formula One events around the world, they'll have Formula 1, Formula 2 and Formula 3 and maybe Porsche Carrera Cup.
Porsche, yep.
In other locations, they'll then have some local support categories.
V8s here.
Yep. And in Australia, we have a four-day event and we have supercars, Porsche Carrera Cup and things like either S5000 yep, or Touring Car Masters. So there's an entertaining sports program, but generally overseas, Don, they will have those couple of big...
So if I went to the Grand Prix, I just wouldn't go there at 2 o'clock on Sunday and all you have is this one race. You have a number of races on the undercard.
Spot on. But it used to be the case in Europe that they would. They had this F1-centric approach that was just you'd go along and you'd only see Formula One race and you'd buzz off back to the bars in Italy. We recognise that people have got to be entertained in Melbourne, so you've got a whole day's entertainment and it has supercars and it has speed comparisons.
You have a whole 4 days entertainment, really, don't you?
Were you in the celebrity race? Because the celebrity race was one of those things as well.
I was, yep. Don, you're not going to ask any more questions.
I was.
About
this is a practical
the difference
thing, and then I'm backing
Formula
out.
One and Formula.
I've driven around that course, you know, I've cut through there on the way to come to this podcast. Now, I thought it was pretty rough. How often do you, to me, I thought this would have to be billiard-like table road for those cars. Now, I went across and I thought, shit, there's a couple of hole cracks here. They've filled them up with asphalt. Surely they don't race on this. Do you resurface that course every year?
No, in fact, Monaco resurfaces it every year because Monaco's Monaco, but there's a few manhole covers that sort of get sucked up and into the because of the downdraft. But no, we resurface it once every 25 years because when it has never been resurfaced, and we're going through that process now as long as well as some geometric changes. Mm. So that's why it's a bit rough.
That
because but they don't like also billiard table smooth. So Formula One drivers are like golfers, and you know we've got a golfer here. There's always complaints about the speed of the greens or modifying the, one of the best holes in the world and stuff like that. We've redesigned some of the turns. We're putting down a new asphalt, but the new asphalt is going to have a higher level of abrasiveness.
Yes.
So you're going to get tyre degradation. Yes. Sam, hopefully it goes to two-stop strategies.
Yes.
And there's a little
hang
bit
on, hang on. Does that mean you get better grip by doing what you're saying?
You're going to get better grip, yes, but it also is these tyres are sort of, you know, there's a lot of technology. There's different compounds. There's
soft, medium, of, hard rubber.
Yeah, and so what it means is if you're pulling 4.5 Gs, it got 340 kilometres around Lakeside Drive in the Grand Prix, you're going to get higher levels of degradation if you're not looking after your cars. And it's meaning? Been very processional for 8 or 9 years, as Sam said earlier on, and there's changes afoot for next year's cars completely different. And so the resurfacing that we've done, Sam, and being finalised over Christmas, New Year, will be the final, pun intended, icing on the cake to make it a great circuit next year.
Ivan, what were you going to say?
Yeah, meaning the more tyre deg that you get, the more opportunities the teams may have to pit for tyres and things like that, much more exciting.
So I wasn't going to go there quite yet, but you said we're resurfacing, do it every 25 years on the basis that we keep the Grand Prix. Is it in jeopardy from year to year or contract to contract, or is it a fait accompli that we will have the Grand Prix? And Adelaide probably would have thought that too when they lost it.
Yeah, and so given Adelaide and what you just mentioned there, nothing's a fait accompli in the world of major events, because back when Joan Kerner created the Melbourne Major Events Company, people realised that to put a city on the map, you've got to have big events. And so we went out and we acquired MotoGP and Formula One and three President's Cups and a World Swimming and Com Games and all that sort of stuff. And if you take your eye off the ball, then Qatar will jump in, or Abu Dhabi or Singapore with a night race. So the reason we resurface is because we've been working with the guys at Formula One, Bernie back in the old days and now Liberty Media, to make sure that we've got a strong relationship. We've got a four-year remaining on the current contract, and as I've said many a time, you don't go spending $20 million and upgrading the circuit only for 4 years. So we're always working on the future, and they know that Melbourne is the place for Formula One.
So do you pay a licensing fee?
Yeah, state government pays a licensing fee to Formula One, like any, it's sort of like any host city.
And how much is that licensing fee?
Oh, it's substantial.
What, 200 million of...
It's said, Don, that the government, the state government, they put in 70 million?
Yeah, they put in around 60 million was the last one. So what happens is we pay a licensing fee to Formula One, and then we stage the event, and the gap between our expenditure and revenue is paid for by the government, and then they get the return economically, branding-wise, tourism, that whole major events industry, and then it becomes really...
That's what I was getting to, the photo.
The gap.
How big is that? How big or the Melbourne is this, and what do we grow? What do we gross?
Yeah, okay, so there's a financial outlay each year to stage the event. When the annual report gets tabled in Parliament, and we work with the Treasurer and Treasury and Finance, there's about $50 to $60 to $70 million number that government puts on the table to pay for the event. That's the bottom line. And then they get an economic and a branding return for their financial outlay.
You can't measure that,
though. Yeah, you can. Well, yes, and then it becomes a bit like two blokes arguing. You get the economic modelling. And the conservative economic modelling says that you get an economic return of $32 to $39 million. And there's another set of models that says you can get
that it's
between
a financial loss
on that model.
Yep.
But then another one, if you look at it's about $175 to $225 million, so you've got an economic gain. Yep.
For what? Hang on, where does that come from?
that becomes from every hotel in town being full, every restaurant being full, people recognising that through MotoGP, when that staged, or Formula One, geez, I'm going to go to Melbourne.
Do they come from overseas?
Yeah, normally outside COVID, we'd get about 12,000 overseas visitors and about 28,000 interstate.
So it is a tremendous thing for the city that holds it. So while the crowds might ebb and flow from year to year, I read about 1.5 billion people watch a Grand Prix. Every event on a Grand Prix in China and Europe and around the world, maybe that's not right.
No, it's a bit... That's probably,
on television, I mean.
Yeah, no, there's probably about... I think they actually say there's about between 500 million to a billion in the collective audience of Formula One. So for each race... But this is the thing. Back in the old days, it was free-to-wear, one set of channels. Now you've got... There wouldn't have been a person in the world... who wasn't talking about Abu Dhabi and what happened on the weekend over Sunday night, Monday, and still to now.
So we will talk about that in a minute.
So the benefits of a city is that, Don, the one thing that we didn't mention when we talked about branding and economics is you've got a whole tourism industry and a major events industry that allows Melbourne to stage everything from Harry Potter and stage shows to the winter masterpieces, and all that adds to the tourism economy in a big manner. And the economics that the government's done and Ernst & Young, EY, have done says that that's about $3.5 billion of the overall tourism economy, which is $35 billion, you know, and you've got to have the revenue coming in to pay for the roads and schools and hospitals and everything. So, you know, people who just come along and say we shouldn't have events don't realise that it's part of a very...
Do you handle the licensing of the or the telecast going worldwide? Do you get a fee for that?
No, that's one thing. We don't. So Formula One is we pay them to bring the motorsport show to town, whereas a tennis, for instance, they own those global media rights.
So
different model, but it's still a major event that obviously comes to town for the purpose of, you know, putting the city on the map.
So how much pressure... does the New South Wales government or any other state government, particularly Sydney, because Sydney is known around the world as the main place in Australia, how much pressure do the New South Wales government put on the Grand Prix organisation overseas to have the event staged there? Do you know?
We know they've spoken to Formula One. We know that the South Australians speak to Formula One.
Is it a money thing? If they just keep offering them more money than you, they'll get it?
No, because there's a bit more to it than that. When you've got a partnership and you've got a relationship with someone for 25 years and they know that the best place to stage a Formula One event is in a city that really is going to attend it and draw people to it, you do it in Sydney, they just don't go to major events. They go to beaches and the harbour.
Well, so how come Adelaide lost it? Because the whole of Adelaide used to go to the Grand Prix because it was by far the biggest sporting thing they did.
Changing era and a bit of ambivalence by the government of the day back in Adelaide.
I see.
Yeah, so you can't take your eye off the ball. And what it shows is that there's any person, if you were the tourism boss, major events boss in any state around the city or any city within Asia and stuff, someone would be saying, well, what events are we going to get to town? And you'd look at them all and say, well, Formula One and MotoGP are big and so are these other stage shows and Hamilton and Moulin Rouge and whatever it is. They're going to put bums on seats. So let's go out and speak to the people and find out. They speak to Formula One, they say, we're very happy with Melbourne and we're more than very happy. We've got a long-term agreement with Melbourne. They say, okay, well, we're not going to get that. But it's no surprise that they want to get Formula One because it's so bloody good to the economy and so good for a city.
So practically, I looked at it when it first came to Melbourne and and I don't know whether it's just bullshit from the drivers, they said, oh, fantastic track and all the rest. How does the track rate now, I don't know how long it's been here, how does it rate now, say 20 years, 15 years down the track, I don't know how long it's been around, how does the track rate?
Well, the track is the thing that we've had to change because what they do, they said, love coming to Melbourne, get in the airport, straight into town, we'll stay near the river, we'll eat, you know, South Bank, or the Ferrari guys with Michael Schumacher used to go up to Lygon Street pretty regularly. We're 4 kilometres from the circuit. The people are friendly. We have a bloody good time in Melbourne. The issue was that track hadn't been changed for 26 years. 1996 was the first race, so it's about 24 races that we've had on it. And they'd say, great, but it's a bit processional. So, Don, the criticism...
What do you mean
processional? Difficult to overtake. And that's what Sam was saying, bit predictable, because it is a difficult circuit to overtake with the current aerodynamics and the specs of the cars.
So that, oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's one of the challenges. That's why we've had to, in resurfacing it, we've made some changes to corners around the circuit to try and get that level of overtaking. But there's some massive spec changes that are coming on board from the organisers of the sport for 2022, and that's why it promises to be very, very exciting.
So we'll see more than this mundane one car stuck behind the other for the whole trip, do you think?
Spot on. It will, you know, it's been a bit processional for many years.
Yeah. So before we get on to the mechanics of why it's so boring at the minute and how you can change that, why aren't we, it says here, that we're not the first race. I would have thought if we're not the last race, we used to be the first race to see the new cars and create the interest. We're now the third race. And the reason given, I don't know if you gave it or not, it said because it gives us a little more time to prepare. Why would you need more time to prepare to have the first race? You could start preparing now for it.
That's what I said, a couple of things. I said there was two. The prime reason that we've
got
to change...
What is the prime reason?
The prime reason is a thing called Ramadan. Yes.
A big
what?
Ramadan.
Ramadan.
Yep, so...
The Muslim Ramadan.
Yeah, so the first...
Really?
So Formula One this season had 22 races.
Yep.
Last year in COVID, it was 17, and it would have been about 21. Next year, there's 23 races, and we've had new races...
This will be good, this explanation of... go on, Ramadan, go ahead.
And there are more races in the Middle East than there have been in the past.
Yes.
Two of those new races, or one of the races is Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
And the other one, which has been...
Just been.
And another one, which is a hallmark event, is Bahrain. The other two are in Qatar and also Abu Dhabi, which was the finale.
Yeah.
Ramadan is early next year. It actually commences on the 2nd of April.
So
you have to, before Ramadan, you have to stage two races. So the complexity of scheduling the whole season means that the season will open in Bahrain on the 20th of March. You'll then go to Saudi Arabia. They will have a break and then they will come to Melbourne.
So we've been punted off the opening race for a religious holiday, have we, in another country?
Yes.
Well, why couldn't he go
so
earlier?
Money talking. That is the Arab sheikdom and the oligarchs just paying whatever it is to buy the event when they want it.
No, it's not. And what Don said, which is a really interesting point, and I think he knows more about the world of Formula One than
he knows
FIA
nothing.
Regulations, because Don, there's actually written into the regs, when they have 22 races a year, 23, there's actually a specification that says there's 12 week down the tools between last race, which was Abu Dhabi on the 12th of December, and the commencement of testing in the following year. So when you look at the scheduling and when they've got to finish and when they've got to have lots of other things across the logistics of a global sport, the earliest that they could start testing in Bahrain was that 12th, 13th of March. Then they'll have the first race, the second race, and us. I do not mind, in an absence of 3 years, missing out on that first race. Because the other thing is, new spec cars, there's going to be a lot of cobwebs that are going to have to get ironed out.
What a magnificent piece of public relations that is, Andrew. Andrew, I agree with you. Yeah. We would take any race because we've been starved of it. But that is extraordinary that we have been shoved out of the number one opening race because they have paid the money to have it when they want it.
They haven't paid. But the other thing is, this isn't the first time.
But...
We were 2006, we gave up first race. 2010,
we had the last.
Same thing happens, right? No, 2010.
Oh, Adelaide used to be the last.
Adelaide was the last. Now, this year, when we had the cancellations, we were originally going to be in March, 2021 I'm talking.
Yep.
March, we were going to be our normal race. Then we were going to be deferred till November. and we had to cancel that. And that would have been the third last race. Now, that would have been in the sweet spot of this season. Clearly, it finished in Abu Dhabi. But for four of the last 5 years, the race has been decided. So the bookends, being at the start or being at the end of the season, is where you want to be.
Of course.
Well, we've and we're just not going to be in the middle of the year because, well, start, I'm talking, you know, near the start.
Near the start. The start is the start. That would create world interest to see the new cars, the new specs and the new season. Were you, what was it, and I know you'll say that you took advice of the health department or the health ministers about COVID not putting the race on, but the amount of lies and bullshit the government have told us about COVID and the restrictions and masks and the spread of it and how the crap that they keep saying. What was it necessary to cancel the opening race last, was it this year or last year?
No, it was last year, 2020.
Because I know Lewis Hamilton, I think, said, I'm not sure why we've cancelled this. And you said, oh, we're relying on the health ministers to tell us whether we can run it or not. It must have nearly stuck in your craw when that you said you couldn't have it.
It did. It was very, very disappointing. It was the 13th of March. It was a Friday morning.
It was an hour before it was about to start.
Yeah, because we'd had a positive test. You know, the sport, they've come a long, long way because back there it was a McLaren team member tested positive. Yeah. That had a level of sort of transmission through the garage. There was, it was the commencement of the outbreak. We were on sort of, ground zero because on the Sunday beforehand, you'd had 85 or 86,000 people at the MCG for the Women's T20 final.
Exactly.
We were able to get Thursday away, but this was an emerging thing that we really didn't know much about. Now, we're all armchair experts on COVID, and at the time it was medical advice and also the teams who basically said, we're not able to race.
Hang on, the team said that, why?
Well, because it was so new to all of them, Don, and then the teams looked at it along with the health stuff, and when the decision was finally made, it turned out that, officially made, I should say, it turned out that two of the drivers, Raikkonen and Vettel, were already on an Emirates flight heading back to Europe because they departed at 6:30 that morning. Yeah. So there were many, many things happening between sort of 8 p.m. on Thursday, the 12th of March, and about 11 a.m. on Friday, the 13th of March.
Yeah, no, it was a...
And the right decision was made.
Well, was it? So we've okay, so we've got Omicron now, apparently, which is meant to be the big...
What happened to all those Greek letters between Kappa, Delta and Omicron? I mean,
it's a rort what's going on. And let me suggest this to you, that April the 10th yes. rolls round and suddenly the government, whichever one it is at the time, and the health experts who know no more about it than you and I, they just keep mentioning the same bullshit day in, day out. If April the 10th comes around, they said, oh, no, look, the Omicron's got its eye in, and what's the likelihood that they could cancel that at the drop of a hat? Have you guaranteed to run the race on the 10th of April next year?
Yes, we're guaranteed.
Guaranteed, no matter what happens.
So I'm going to use the word guaranteed because what I would say is that there's a recognition now that the economy, all those things I was talking about before, Don, the contribution of what we need to do and the opening up and the living with this virus is vitally important to live with it.
Exactly.
So therefore, you look at the Boxing Day, you look at the tennis and you look at this. There's going to be scenarios that will always come up, and the world of Formula One and what we do in events is you've got to deal with all those scenarios, and we'll be able to deal with those scenarios.
Of course.
That's why we're selling like hotcakes and we're on sale and the teams will be here.
Of course.
And what do the teams do when they come in from overseas? Do they have to isolate? No, I don't mean the quarantine period.
No.
You could come over and stick in your little bubble, in South Melbourne or somewhere, and that's all you, so you're not really isolating.
Yep.
Is this what you're doing, confining them in some way?
No, it's actually going to be freer than that, because when we were endeavouring to get the races up this year, Don, Formula One, to deliver the 22 races that they've delivered and the 17 last year, they were operating in a bubble. So they'd fly in, they're not able to quarantine for 14 days. They would come in a bubble, they'd go to charter flights, they'd go into a hotel, they'd go straight to the circuit, they'd have their meals in the facilities at the circuit, or they'd have it in a hotel room, and they were basically not mixing. Now the situation...
Well, but they'd basically do that anyway, wouldn't they?
No, there's a little bit more freedom. You know, okay. Let's say you're sponsored by, you know, back in the day you were sponsored by Windvale Wine, you'd have to do some sponsorship deals. Well, they're sponsored by Mercedes or Hugo
you're
Boss
a Hawthorne
or Red
supporter.
Bull. Don't
very,
get onto that.
Very, you're a very, very astute
I'm a Bulldog supporter, but there was a period of time, I'll make it a that I did follow the Hawks. Peter Crimmins was my actually, but so, someone's given you some intel there.
No, you gave yourself away.
So just following on from the fact that we've learned to live with the virus and it'll definitely be on in April the 10th,
yes.
And I understand,
yes,
and I couldn't agree with you more. Why wasn't that the principal case when they cancelled the first race? And they say, no, it's too important for the economy. It's too important. They just made it up. They just, it was a knee-jerk reaction because one person got COVID and now suddenly there's 3,000 people a week get it here in this state and everything's open for business. It was an absolute joke why they cancelled it because no one knew what they were talking about and still don't.
Well, they've got to administer the Health Act. They've got to do their job, and they've got to protect us. And so, what was done
nothing.
Was done. What was done was done.
Yes.
And what we had to do was try and deliver. And I will never apologise for us as event organisers having an absolute crack in giving it every opportunity
to deliver.
And but when the decision
it's out
is
of your
made,
hands,
it's out of our hands.
Yes, of course.
What I believe, though, here and now, is that for. It's about 117, 116 days away, the race, 10th of April, will be the third, as you pointed out, and we're now building more stands, more facilities,
yes,
because of the fact that people haven't seen a Formula One,
yep,
Australian Grand Prix for 3 years.
Righto, Andrew. Yeah. So let's get on to the... So could you... you can't guarantee anything. The Formula One season is a farce. The lead up is fantastic. There's no better atmosphere in the lead up on the Sunday morning. They do the warm up lap and they stand on the grid and the red lights go off and bang off they go. And after three laps, you may as well just go away for an hour and 20 minutes and then come back, unless you want to see some crashes.
There's a lot of races that do start and finish and run like that, but Sam, God, there's a lot of races this season that had everything.
No, only for two cars, three cars.
Oh, no, well,
what about the other 18 cars?
Daniel Ricciardo win a race at Monza, so
yep. Lando could have won one,
that.
You know.
And remembering now, we're talking about next year, 2022, all the specs for the cars are different, aren't they, Andrew?
Yeah.
So they're,
yes,
they're made to be
Let's
faster,
hope so.
Closer.
Let's hope that some of there's 20 cars in the grid, let's hope that 18 of them actually are thereabouts and not lapped every 20 minutes. Let's hope that all the teams, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, surely they must be able to make the cars more even.
Yes, and it's a really good point you make, because if you look at MotoGP,
yes,
the top 18...
Is that the sports...
That's the motorbikes. That's the motorbikes.
Oh, okay.
So, Don, from the pole sitter, the fastest to maybe the 20th, there might be 0.3 of a second. In Formula 2, there might be about 0.3 of a second between the top 20 in terms of their times. In Formula 1, there's often about 2.3 seconds. And there's a gap between Mercedes and Red Bull and the rest. So
yeah,
you've got to clash up at the top, and then you've got the midfield and you've got a couple of the slower teams who are never going to feature.
So it doesn't sound much to be a second and a half slower a lap, but if you work out the fact, I'm not telling you
58
anything,
laps,
if
yep.
you work out the fact that a car in a second will travel about 150 or 200 metres in a
yep.
second, you multiply that by 58 laps and 2 seconds, you end up being lapped three times, some of them.
So there's a guy called Ross Brawn.
Yes.
Ross Brawn is the managing director of motorsport for Formula One. He was the team boss when Michael Schumacher won all his world championships at Ferrari. This guy is a guru when it comes to specifications. And what Formula One has realised is that there is a disparity. The aerodynamics have become so exact that if you get stuck behind the car in front, you lose so much of your efficiency compared to if you were in free air.
Yep.
They've made all these aerodynamic changes so that you are not penalised as much because of the reduction in efficiency by following the car in front. So what this means is it's going to be closer and closer racing. Now, they do a lot of simulation work. They've been working on this for 2 or 3 years. And the people and the brains behind it, I've got to have confidence that they know what they've been doing. And the proof will be in the pudding in these testing and when you're in Melbourne in April.
Now, I know, Andrew, that the world is evolving. But to me, Formula One lost its soul. There was nothing more exhilarating and exciting when those cars, those normally aspirated or even turbocharged engines, stood on that grid and they revved up and you could hear them down in Mornington, the cars. That, to me, was the excitement of it. Now they've made them hybrid electric cars and I know we're moving and they want to be the leading race organisation in the world and, you know...
So what are the cars quieter, are they?
Oh, they're quieter.
Well, they need plugs when you're standing.
They actually put microphones in... They were putting microphones in the engines to make the sound... You could hear the car go past and not even know it had gone past in the first stages of hybrid day.
I can remember that morning. So, Dom, what they had was they were a V8 engine revving at sort of 18 or 19,000 RPM, a 2.6 litre engine, yep. And they went to a V6 hybrid engine operating at much lower revs. And when Ron Walker and I were there in 2014, yep. They came out on track. The Porsche Carrera Cup, the supercars, yep. The Swans were louder than the Formula One cars. And there was an important part of the DNA that changed back then. Now, they are... But on the flip side...
Yeah, what?
They are louder now.
They're louder?
And they are not the same ear-piercing stuff that existed in the 90s, 80s and 70s, which was fantastic. Completely different. And it was fantastic. But I tell you what it's done is it means you can actually... have a bloody good conversation with people. It's introducing new people to the sport and they are loud and it is still exciting.
No,
but it's different.
No, I remember when they first came out, I stood with Ross Stevenson from 3AW, yep. The world's greatest breakfast announcer.
Yes, yes.
And and I'm standing there in one of the boxes, 3AW, I don't know which one it was, and he said to me, he's got a glass of beer in his hand, he said... When are the cars... This was... They were in practicing. He said, when are the cars coming out? As one went by, and I said, it's just gone by. And he said, what? And he walked over to the balcony.
Because
he said,
it was quiet.
Oh, he couldn't hear it. So then they put microphones or loudspeakers in the engine, yep. Just to manufacture a sound so that people could hear them.
They changed the mufflers and everything.
So to me, it lost its... Anyhow, I still love it, but... It has become a farce. They've got to do something about making it exciting for the crowd and have all the cars race one another.
Yeah, because and I reckon that's going to be 2022.
And the young boy from England,
Hamilton.
George Russell. When George Russell took over Lewis Hamilton's Mercedes and put it on pole and they deliberately fucked up.
No, they didn't.
They deliberately... deliberately fucked up the tyre change so he wouldn't win when he came in because they couldn't have George Russell taking over Lewis Hamilton's car and winning. Yeah. When that happened, I thought, seriously, I know they're great drivers, but if they had the cars pretty similar, it would be much more exciting.
Yeah, and there is
Andrew.
It is a new breed of these young kids coming through, and we've got one of the best in the business that you're probably going to talk about. I hope you're going to mention that young kid from Brighton, Oscar Piastri, at some stage.
He's an Australian.
Oh, yeah.
Melbourne boy.
So look,
racing in this lower grade?
Yeah, he was in... He won the...
Formula 2.
Gardner medal for the Rezzies. Yeah. He won Formula 2, and last year he won Formula 3. So the two guys on the grid who are George Russell, who's taking over Bottas's drive in Mercedes, so he's a gun, he'll be in the constructors' team, Mercedes. George Russell won Formula 3, Formula 2. Charles Leclerc, who drives for Ferrari, won Formula 3, Formula 2. And now this young kid from Melbourne, who's managed by Mark Webber, he's in the Alpine Racing Academy, so he's going to be the understudy next year in Formula One for one of the teams called Alpine. He's just won Formula 3, Formula 2, and he's a gem.
So do you, Andrew Westacott, Do you rub shoulders with the creme de la creme of the people who run the Grand Prix around the world, or are you just stuck down here running our little show here, or do you go over and watch them? Are you part of the decision-making process of any type at all, or are you just the CEO here in Melbourne and we tend to be ignored down at the bottom of the world?
Well, the creme de la creme are just uncut diamonds like myself. They're just bloody good people who... Yep. Exist as promoters around the world. So we're all independent promoters and we actually communicate and get on very well.
Good.
As other cities around, and we share notes and so on. The people at Formula One are sensational people. You know, they are people we've worked with for, well, 25 years, and I've worked with them for 15 years, and they are just great people to work with, but you've got to get to know them. You've got to have a beer with them. We probably get to about one or two events a year in a normal year. Because you obviously pick up, the best thing we do is go along, you pick the eyes out of the best events, you steal their ideas, you modify and adapt them, and then you make our event better. And generally, they pinch more of our ideas because we adapt a bit, like what we were talking about with the support program. So, yeah, we get on very well and we mix with them well, and we'd use their ideas to make our
event
better.
So I don't suppose you were around when Bernie Eccleston was just riding roughshod over everyone and taking all the money for himself and became a multi-billionaire because of whatever. But did you...
Yeah, no, I had a bit to do with Bernie.
Did you?
Yeah.
It was, but he told us what to do and when to do it and how high to jump, did he? He was a bit of a demigod, not a demigod, he was a bit of a dictator for the sport.
Yes, he was, and he ran it because when he was running it, he wanted to make a lot of money for himself, and then when he was the CEO for private equity, he was told to make a lot of money for them.
Yep. He got fined.
Private equity, what, were a team?
No, they were the company. There was a company
backers,
called CVC,
they?
Who was the owners of Formula One for a period of time, and then obviously they have shareholders who were doing this. So Bernie, for the last 5 or so years, was a CEO. He had, I think, about 8% shareholding in
didn't
the business.
Didn't he get fined $100 million for it was fraud?
Yes,
was
with
fraud?
Was
that fraud?
And I'll use the word allegedly because I think that's what people tell us to do. But allegedly then
he wouldn't have paid the money if
he settled that fraud
by
paying $100 million to the German banks involved. So
that's right, yeah.
But Bernie was a deal maker.
Yeah.
And he did a huge amount.
Nothing
of
wrong
getting
with that, I suppose.
No, he's a great guy. He got the sport, but you have to stare him down every now and then, and that's what happened every now and then. So
can I ask a practical question? You just mentioned, I'm going back a couple of questions, you mentioned I think it was Mercedes and somebody else at the top team.
Red Bull.
Okay, so what advantage is there for the bloke called Paul Stoddard, who had a team, an Australian, you know, just seem to be going around competing in these and not getting anywhere. What advantage do these people making up the numbers get out of doing this, and how do they make money?
Well, they make money through the sponsorship, through the dividend that comes at the end of the year. So that
from the major body?
Yeah, so the major body. You actually, interesting, you think about this. Tennis players come along, there's a big one of those big core flute checks that's given to them, said you've won $10 million for winning some tennis tournament no one's heard of. When you come along to Formula One, they'll have the champagne and podium celebration. The money actually gets divided up at the end of the year based on the points from 1st to 10th in the Constructors' Championship.
Oh,
so that's where. So what they get out of it is you pay a fee to own a licence, to own a team, but at the end of it, if you're finishing second or third, you're going to get more than you will if you're finishing eighth, ninth or tenth. And it's based on the points in the constructors.
So much goes for winning, and then there's a provident fund type thing, or a fund, super fund set up, which is divvied at the end of the year amongst everybody.
Yep, so, and it's a very, very, very rigorous contractual arrangement, and there's lots of nuances, and that's a podcast story in itself.
So if money was no problem, you just couldn't buy a franchise, or we couldn't just buy a franchise and enter a car like Force India, the man who was a billionaire
VJ
who went broke, didn't he?
Now that team, Force India, became Racing Point, and it's now the Aston Martin team.
He just had a lot of money and decided you just can't buy a franchise, can you? Because there's limited spots on the grid, I suppose, or can you?
Well,
how much does it cost to get a license?
Well, the regs have, I think, a maximum of 12 teams, 24 cars. I think we're now at 20 cars.
Mm-hmm. So there's 20 cars starting each race?
Yeah, and two per team. So there's 10 teams. Now, I'll give you a best example. Williams, which is one of the most historically well-known teams.
Frank.
UK.
Just died, didn't he?
Sir Frank Williams passed away recently, and Claire Williams, his daughter, was the team owner. Mm. The team principal. And Alan Jones raced for Williams in 1980, our last world champion. Yep. So a long time between drinks for us. And mentioning drinks, lots of people have grandstands and everything. Alan Jones at the Williams factory has the Alan Jones Bar named after him.
Does he?
It's a beautiful bar and it's got photos about him. But Williams just recently sold to investors from the US. So people, you essentially buy a license and investors can come in. McLaren is owned by... I don't know.
How much it costs to buy a license?
I don't know, but I'll put in perspective. It costs about $150 million US to
run a
team at the lower to mid-end. The big boys, Mercedes, Red Bull, Ferrari, are spending $350 to $500
million. A team, that's a car?
No, a team, which I think would be the two cars, Sam.
Yeah,
you reckon it might be one, but anyway,
I reckon they almost spend $1 billion.
Well, it's a serious amount.
What on a team
on a year running those cars? I've just heard.
Yeah,
that.
So you can buy one.
Yeah.
If you want to go along, and obviously you can buy a share. Now the Bahrainis own, I think it's a majority share of the McLaren business.
Yep.
So there's lots of backers behind these sorts of things.
Money.
So you can get into it and you've got money.
It's a money thing, like they've taken the first Grand Prix off for Ramadan. That's the money.
No, that's a scheduling issue. Yeah, of course
it's a scheduling issue because they said, we want to have it in our religious holiday in bugger Melbourne.
Well, we wouldn't want to have it on Easter.
Wouldn't we?
No. Why not?
Why not?
Why not?
If it was number of first race.
We want to be able to make sure that we can have people having family celebrations with their families, and you make sure that you have Formula One.
Well, most of my family goes to the F1.
Nonsense,
so.
Andrew. That is absolute nonsense.
What's the weather
well,
like?
Well, you could say that the US Masters is an exception, and I know you love your golf.
Yeah,
so,
have it on. We can have it on Anzac Day. And this is just my opinion, the most inept sporting organisation in the world are Ferrari. If they can snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory on any race they have a chance of winning, they do it. And
so
for
what are you
Enzo,
saying they're unscrupulous?
No, they're just incompetent. The Italian, to have that company just solely exist to build racing cars, they are absolutely pathetic.
Because
they're the Italians, they fuck it up every time they got a chance of winning. They bring them in at the wrong time, or they put the wrong tyres on them, or they take a long time to change the tyres. They are the worst. But that's just an opinion. Now, what about what
your voice? You.
Nah, they're
one of the most iconic brands in the world.
Exactly.
And they make the most beautiful cars, they've won a lot of world championships.
Exactly, exactly.
Everyone goes through eras, don't they? That's the great thing about the cars.
So if you're talking about Alan Jones having a bar in Williams, why they wouldn't have a monument to Michael Schumacher? And isn't it extraordinary that we've heard nothing about that man? Or mind you, there was a doco
he's
on
sick,
him,
isn't he?
There was a sick. He's just being kept alive. There was a doco on him about all. It was fantastic, except it never spoke about anything that was going on in his life at this stage. It was they may as well not have done it.
It had a lot of reflection on the great parts of his career. But it's sad what happened. Fancy, isn't that unbelievable? The fact that you can put your life on the line racing 200 or 300 kilometres an hour.
That is irony.
Skiing in Maribel in December, I think it was 2013, and that happens to you.
That is the epitome of irony. Mm. Do you know that when he hit the obstacle, he did skiing. He walked then into the surgery or the medical room.
No, I didn't.
Walked in and said he wasn't feeling well, and had a bit of a headache. and then the rest is history. He then collapsed, and he will. They're just keeping him alive. So can I ask you this? When the Grand Prix got here, we had a lot of Ulsters get yellow ribbons and dressed up and camped on the...
Sorry, Ulsters.
Ulsters, old pensioners, old people like us, Don. Oh. They got yellow ribbons and they camped on the Albert Park Lake, and they said, we're going to stay here until this race is taken away, and why it's here, I don't know. And in fairness, they lasted for about 2 years, I think. People just... took over shifts and sat there and cooked barbecues, and then they thought, no, fuck it, what are we doing this for? So do they ever get in touch with you, or is that just died a natural death, all that?
No, they're still passionate to the cause, and, you know, they exist under the name of Save Albert Park.
Yeah, well, Save Albert.
I played very poor amateur footy with collegians back in the day, and used to, you know, have to jog around for training around the lake, and it was crappy. And now what you look at and how many people visit that park and how good it is, it's an asset for Melbourne and people love it.
So that was my point. What were they trying to save? I understand that if you just put yourself out for a week, maybe a couple of months to build the stands and all that, but if you put yourself out for a week and the ducks didn't like the noise and the dogs started to get a bit shy because of the noise, but that's dissipated now, what was wrong with it for a week? What were they on about, really?
Well, I come from a perspective of stimulating the economy, the events, and you know, bringing some real profile to the city, and they have a different view and a different approach, and always have been, and you know, we'll keep moving on and delivering the event, and so that's the exciting thing for what we do. And they're never going to like Formula One. They're never going to like the speed of it. They're never going to like what it stands for.
What, just for a week in the year?
Yep.
Yeah, well, that is just anyhow. Go on
now. I've got a question. Ticket sales. How are ticket sales going? Because I had a look about 3 weeks ago, and it says for your hospitality and things like that, asset all exhausted for the sales. So are people buying or what?
Too right, they're buying. I'm confused. Paul or Ivan?
I know, his name's Paul. But I won't tell you why we call him Ivan. But
Do you know, I'll give you an example. In a normal year, we build 30,000 grandstand seats, you know, and we make sure that we build those so they're at capacity on race day. So if we're selling 500 a week for the last few weeks, we work with the engineers and the grandstand suppliers to put those extra 500 or 1,000 seats in, and they're chock-a-block on race day, because it's false economy and it's a stupid economy to build grandstands that aren't going to be fully filled. Yep. We put all 30,000 seats on sale. They sold in 5 days. So then we put another 3,000 or 4,000. They sold in 20 minutes. We put 4,000 on yesterday. They sold in 17 minutes.
Cool.
So now what we're doing is making sure that the next lot of grandstands and, you know, the people listening, we're putting more grandstands on. We're putting more hospitality on. We're putting big viewing hubs because people, you know, are being introduced to the sport. It might be because of Hamilton and Verstappen or even Netflix. So ticket sales are going really well. Mm. And that's
because... Why Netflix?
Well, Netflix, because it's actually introduced people. There, you know, it was probably a stereotype, Don. It felt fast cars and oil and smoking rubber and everything is
like
not for
you,
me.
Don.
When they come along and see that there's a really interesting, exciting approach to this sport, they get captivated. They get a level of association, and it's making a difference.
So I think, Andrew, you could not do a lot worse than extending an invitation to Don and, of course,
don't
me.
Don't waste your ticket.
I'll drag him along.
You'd love it.
Get us a supreme spot and over the things that you can extend to it. No, we'll pay for it.
What do you mean over the...
Over the pits, and you can see all you do a pit walk.
So
on.
They have different, what, premium seats, do they?
No, they have the boxes over the pits.
You can bring the grandchildren at 14 and under are free. You can buy a day ticket for about $90. You can go to hospitality for $285 on a day, but you can go to the top... 5,500 in the Formula One Paddock Club, which is over the garages. You get a pit lane walk, and then there's everything in between. So you might pay, you know, $350, $450 for a 4-day grandstand ticket. And we're putting new grandstands in locations, you know, that are going to give better viewing for the racing that we're going to have in 22?
I don't know if you know this, but I don't know if you would know the figures, but it would seem a pretty good marketing public relations exercise to have the tyre of choice supplied to the teams. Michelin, I think, do it.
No, Pirelli, the Italians, not the French. Pirelli.
It is Pirelli. Yeah. I should... fancy me making a mistake like that. I watch it every week. Yeah. So Pirelli, at what would it cost them a bomb, would it? Or do they... don't tell me the teams buy the tyres from Pirelli or do they supply them?
That's one of those... So Formula One has some... massive global deals that are on an annual basis. So they've got the tyre deal with Pirelli, they've got the official timekeeper is Rolex, they've got the beer is Heineken, they've got Emirates, DHL, Aramco and these sorts of things. So they do those deals and there's a licence or a technical agreement to supply tyres as part of a sponsorship arrangement. And Pirelli is the official control tyre. In some eras, they have had more than one tyre. So you could choose brand X or brand Y, depending on what you wanted to do. But now they've got a control tyre, as they call
it. So they pay, Pirelli pay to supply the tyres or do they get paid?
No, they pay a lot of money to supply the tyres because that's part of their branding and technical.
And of course, we had Foster's was all over the world and it sponsored it. Must have cost them a bomb.
Yeah.
To do, what did it cost Foster's to do that?
I don't know. But typically the global deals that they're doing is sort of a 50 to 100 year, 100 million a year sort of arrangement for each of these sorts
of... How long have you been in this, Andrew?
I started at Grand Prix Corporation in late 2006.
Okay, so with these advances in these cars that race around, does anything go into the domestic car? Do they adapt or take...
They do. You and it's everything from now the hybrid engine and the technology associated with that to you look at the paddles on the steering wheel, you look at the use of different technology.
What are paddles on the steering
wheel? Just the
flipper gears.
The gear systems and so on. And then, but most importantly, it's companies like Mercedes-Benz with this hybrid engine. So Formula One, when Sam and I were talking about the noise and the change, they went from a normally aspirated... in internal combustion engine to a hybrid power unit, which sort of harnesses braking energy from the kinetic energy of the braking. It goes into the batteries, and this is why you're getting more hybrid cars on the road. So there's safety technology, and there's also fuel efficiency and other technology in the cars that are emanating from the businesses that are involved in Formula One. The other thing, from a sustainability point of view, is that they've now got a program to working with some of the biggest, you know, fuel companies and technology companies in the world to develop synthetic renewable fuels. Now, what Stefano Domenicali says, the boss of Formula One these days, he said, and it's a strong view, he says, look, about 92% of the vehicles and mobility is still non-electric. So you've got to have a solution that's going to improve the efficiency of that on an ongoing basis. And this hybrid power unit that came in 2014 is the most fuel-efficient engine on the planet. Now, if they can continue those technologies and the safety, Don, then we're going to be better in our road vehicles as we progress to more sustainable future.
To Don's question, I think just off the top of my head, you'll probably say that's completely wrong. There's only three Formula One cars that actually have road cars. Renault, Ferrari, Mercedes. What other cars?
Honda.
Honda have a team?
Yeah, Honda have the engines in Red Bull.
Oh, no, the engines, but they don't call them Honda, do they?
And McLaren is the other road car. So there's...
Oh, yes, McLaren.
Yeah, so there's four okay. Plus the engine supply for Red Bull. So, yeah.
Oh, anyhow, that's
and
right.
And Honda's obviously pretty significant in the Japanese car.
Absolutely. So now let's just get on to for the Formula One devotees, Don, that have watched the season like I have, and I sit up, well, I actually tape it and get up at all hours of the morning to watch it. And that last race was an absolute farce and a sham. It was a sham.
Did you say sensation?
No, it wasn't a sensation. It was a farce. For a start, if you, Max Verstappen, who drove so quickly into a corner and punted, and I'm no fan of Hamilton's, punted him off the road because he was either going to take him out because he would have won the championship on count back because he's won more races, and Hamilton, to his credit, said, no, I'll get off the track, and then had to slow down to let him catch up. And in the end, when they gave one lap after they had to retrieve a broken or smashed car, they gave one lap, gave Verstappen a chance to come in, change his tyres, and in one lap, of course, he was going to pass Hamilton, who was on tyres that had done 40 laps. That should have ended under yellow flags, that race, and it was a farce, and it was got up for Verstappen to win.
I don't agree
and
with you.
And you say...
I say bollocks.
Why do you? What about the safety car? They let some of the cars go through and they didn't let the others go through.
I'll give you an analogy from a distance running point of view. We all know foot race. Let's say a marathon. You're coming along and the first and second places, they come into the Olympic Stadium right at the end and they're starting to lap all these really slow runners.
Yep.
And you've got first and second and there's half a dozen slow runners in the middle.
Yes.
Lots of others have been lapped.
Yes.
Well, you tell those people, get out of the way so that Don Scott and Sam Newman can finish the marathon head-to-head.
That's nonsense, Andrew.
That's exactly what...
If you're in the race, you are entitled to finish the race and run as short a race and not get out of anyone's way. If you want to be passed, let them go round and pass you.
You know, if you're getting that lapped, blue you have
flags.
A blue flag.
Yes, I know.
So what they did is, and this is a really thing that Michael Massey, an Aussie guy, race director, he made a very, very unique and correct decision in
unique.
The regulations. It was unique because what he did is the regulations, rather than letting every car...
That means a once-off.
Well, it might be. Is that the definition of unique? Probably is. But it was a very strong decision. He got rid of the cars that he said you can... It says... Not all, it says any overlapped. And so he said five of the lap cars that were in between Hamilton and Vettel, get out of the way. And
so
he restarted so that you could have the world championship decided by racing conditions, not sitting behind
yes,
a
having
car.
Allowed well, Max so Verstappen to come in and change his tyres, which made it a fait accompli that of course
but
he'd hey, go
Lewis,
past.
Can I ask a question? Was there a difference in the time? Was it 5 seconds between first and second, or 6 seconds?
It was at various points in time. It was 16 seconds.
Okay, well, why wouldn't they start 16 seconds behind?
Because in the racing sort of scenario, everything changes when you're either bunching up or there's the great
stops.
Thing. Sergio Perez actually sort of delayed him a little bit.
Yep.
They came in and changed tyres because that was a roll of the dice. What I thought of is I thought it was John Bertrand, like in going back to September 83, everything was against the Aussies, 3-1 down in the America's Cup, and there was a miracle. And Christian Horner said, we needed a miracle. They went
he
in
did,
to change tyres. He rolled the dice. If Latifi had not have crashed, who was the Williams guy, and brought out the safety car, Lewis would have won the world championship. But Latifi crashed. They cleared the debris.
And
they
raced for one lap.
Well, there's always going to be one lap left.
It was got up to...
57 of the laps were gone. There's one lap left. So there you go.
Andrew, we're very delighted.
It's been interesting.
We're fascinated.
I think we're going to get him there in April.
No, bullshit. You won't be getting me.
He's a man of excellence. He loves his equestrian and horses. And if he saw what went into those cars... And the absolute excellence of what they do. Mind you, I would advise him just to go and watch the start and then go home. Unless we'll have three races because we're not having the opening race because Ramadan has taken our position. We will have three races to see if the cars are going to be more competitive. And if they're not, God help us, because that sport has... the franchise has significantly been lost through uncompetitive cars.
We should have
my opinion.
We should schedule a chat in sort of late April or May.
We'd love to
compare notes and see what Don thinks of the event.
Well, you're a star, Andrew. Thank you very much for coming in and putting up with all this nonsense. We are with you despite what you think, and it's been fantastic.
Well, Merry Christmas, guys. It was great to chat.
Thank you.